Welcome to Radio C on Youth Express, recorded live from Oakland Catholic High School. This is Gabby Moran, and I'm a junior here at Oakland Catholic. Joining me are juniors Caroline Albacetti, Mary Cumston, and Mara Ward.
Today, we'll be highlighting talent within Oakland Catholic, as well as interfaith traditions and holidays around the world. But first, we're going to start by talking about newly formed Oakland Catholic and Central Catholic Black Student Union's upcoming Kwanzaa celebration.
What is Kwanzaa? Is it a religious holiday? Do people actually celebrate it? These are all questions that will be answered in today's interview. Oakland Catholic BSU celebrates Kwanzaa. Hi, I'm Madison Dalton, a junior at Oakland Catholic. I'm here with fellow junior Liza Wilson, who is a founding board member of the Oakland Catholic Black Student Union. Liza, could you tell me exactly what the Black Student Union is?
The Black Student Union is a club at Oakland Catholic and Central Catholic where any student who's interested can come and learn about the education and empowerment of Black people in the United States.
I've also heard that the Black Student Union is going to be having a Kwanzaa celebration for its December meeting.
Yes.
So how will this celebration differ from a traditional Kwanzaa celebration?
At the meeting, we will have a group discussion, and there will be food, and maybe even spoken word or poetry. And an element that is in the tradition of Kwanzaa that we will also include is the ancestral roll call, which is when Kwanzaa participants stand and tell of someone who's been a personal inspiration to them. But an example of something that we will not be doing is pouring tambika, which is, it's like a cup full of juice or water that is then poured by a priest or an elder into a bowl filled with green vegetables. We will not be doing that.
So it's really cool that you guys are kind of modernizing the tradition and making it your own to fit the club and the club's members. So when exactly are BSU meetings held?
BSU meetings are held on Wednesdays, either before or after school.
It with Central Catholic, and who is allowed to come to these meetings? Do you have to be a formal member? How do you go about that process?
Anyone can really show up, and if they wish to be part of the club, they can sign up. And you can either be a student at Oakland or Central, and it doesn't matter what color you are. Anyone can join.
I know Kwanzaa focuses on 7 different principles. Do you plan on implementing these principles into your celebration and into the club? And what are these 7 principles?
Yes, we do. We do plan on implementing the 7 principles in our Kwanzaa meeting because they're really important to Black life in America. So the first one is umoja, which is unity. Kujichagulia, the second one, is self-determination. The third one, ujima, is collective work and responsibility. The fourth one, ujama, is cooperative economics. The fifth one, nia, is purpose. The sixth one, kumba, is creativity. And the seventh one, imani, is faith.
Which one do you think is most important to particularly your Black Student Union?
I think the most important one for us is umoja, unity, because the purpose of the group is to get people to come together and talk about these issues that are so important. And that's basically the main purpose of our club.
Whenever you say issues that are important, what issues would you consider important to the Black Student Union that will be discussed in future meetings or have been discussed in past meetings?
I would say racism, obviously. Our last meeting was really focused. We had a discussion about what racism is and how it affects us and why it's important. And all of the issues that Black people face in America basically stem from racism. So we're talking about police brutality, European beauty standards and how they affect the Black community, and education, criminal justice, things like that. They all stem from basically racism. So those are just some of the many issues that we have to discuss in the club.
Wow, I can really see why unity would be really important to the Black Student Union and to meetings. It definitely seems like an important principle to focus on. Can you tell me, do you celebrate Kwanzaa yourself, or do you know anyone that does?
Actually, no, I do not celebrate Kwanzaa, and no, I do not know anybody that does celebrate Kwanzaa. But I do think that it's important that we have some sort of Kwanzaa celebration, because it's a big part of African American history.
You say it's important to African American history in America. A lot of people seem to think that it's an African holiday. Can you dispel this truth?
Kwanzaa is not African. It's African American. It was originated in America, and people in Africa do not celebrate Kwanzaa.
Well, thank you for having us, Liza. I'm so happy that the Black Student Union is doing all of this great work, and I'm so happy that you were here to do this interview with me. I'm sure our listeners are much more informed about exactly what the Black Student Union is and what Kwanzaa is.
Not only do Oakland Catholic students have the privilege of learning about other holiday celebrations through their peers, but also a number of students have the opportunity to practice interfaith traditions within their own homes.
Hi, my name is Katie Kennett. I am a sophomore here at Oakland Catholic, and today I will be interviewing a fellow student, sophomore Josie Koss, to talk about the benefits of interfaith traditions. Hi, Josie.
Hi, Katie.
Thank you so much for being with us today. So my first question is, what holidays do you celebrate?
Well, I'm Catholic, and I celebrate all the Christian holidays, but I also celebrate Hanukkah, sometimes Passover, and basically just like whenever I'm at my dad's, if there's a holiday there, I'll just eat there and celebrate with them.
How have these interfaith traditions shaped you as an individual?
I think that because of, like, I'm so exposed to all of these, or to these two religions, that I'm a lot more open-minded, and I can adapt to changes, and then in that I'm like more tolerant to other people's beliefs, and I think everyone has their own beliefs, and yeah.
Do you think you would want to continue these traditions in the future with your family?
I think so, yeah. I think that's interesting. I think everyone should be open to try new things.
Thank you so much for being with us today, Josie. As always, this is an interview conducted by Radio C right here on Youth Express.
Thank you to Katie for bringing light to our own students' interfaith traditions. Oakland Catholic continues to value the enrichment of interfaith education and traditions via our partnership in the Catholic Jewish Educational Enrichment Program annually, and our Female Leadership Initiative plans to host an interfaith panel discussion in the spring of 2016 for our community. So please stay tuned for future updates on our interfaith traditions.
And in addition to religious traditions surrounding the holidays, national and local culture influence our traditions in a myriad of ways. This month, Gabby, Mary, Mara, and I all explored how different cultures celebrate our Christmas and how our student heritage shines through in our own traditions in a tour of the University of Pittsburgh's Nationality Rooms.
Hello, everybody. My name is Mary Cumpston, and I am a junior here at Oakland Catholic. I went on the tour of the Nationality Rooms with some of my fellow juniors who are with us here today. So the Nationality Rooms are a series of rooms on the third and fourth floors of the Cathedral of Learning at the University of Pittsburgh. They're kind of classrooms with rooms built into them, and they represent different countries and have aspects of the culture of these different countries that they represent. Sometimes they include art, artifacts. They reflect different traditions that are in these countries and also have architectural aspects built into them. The University of Pittsburgh has a role that these rooms have to reflect a time period from the country before the establishment of the university itself. So all of them, of course, reflect a time period that's, you know, it's very classical, and a lot of them are just really beautiful rooms and really well done. So the University of Pittsburgh, their various councils and people in charge of these rooms decorate for the holidays, and each of these rooms are decorated differently, and they reflect how the holiday traditions are in the different countries that they represent. So we went on our tour and we visited several rooms. Most of them are functional classrooms. I think all of them except for two We visited the Irish room, the Armenian room, the Korean room, and the Indian, just to name a few, as well as the early American room, too, which we'll be discussing later. And so I'm going to focus in today on the Irish room, because I did live in Ireland for 2 years, and so I have some experience with Irish traditions and cultures that I would like to tie into the room that we saw. So the Irish room is very small and definitely cannot fit many students. So Pitt does have a policy to teach any language that anyone wants to take. And so Gaelic is actually, or like the Irish language, is a huge choice and many people want to learn it. So usually the number of people who want to take Gaelic is so large that they can't fit into the Irish room. So I think that was just an interesting piece of information there. So it's mostly gray stoned, and it's gray stone, and it has stained glass windows. It's designed after an abbey from the Dark Ages in Ireland. In these abbeys, monks lived there, and they had to copy manuscripts by hand. That was the only way to preserve manuscripts and books back in those days. They have a copy of the Book of Kells in the room. And so the Book of Kells it's from the Dark Ages. The monks copied down the Gospels, but they decorated them very beautifully, and the real manuscript is in Trinity College in Dublin. And I was lucky enough to be one of the people who got to see it. You get to go in, and you only get to see one page, and you have to go through really quickly because the guards are trying to get as many people to circulate through as possible. So it was nice to be able to see a copy of that in the Pitt room, where you could, you know, take your time and look at it more closely. So the furniture in the room is decorated with designs from the Book of Kells. It's really beautiful furniture, and they have like swirly patterns and like hunting dogs and stuff like that that you find in the book. And the Christmas decorations. So I think the most prominent decoration in the room was in the middle of the table. They had a cage with a wren in it. And of course the wren wasn't real. So in Ireland, there's a tradition that the day after Christmas is called St. Stephen's Day. The tradition is to put a wren in the cage and go around to houses doing a mixture of caroling and trick-or-treating. So you'd go knock on someone's door, you'd sing them a carol, and they would invite you in and you would, you know, celebrate with them and eat food and that kind of thing. And in the part of Ireland that I lived in, this tradition wasn't too popular, but it is more common in some smaller villages, particularly in more rural areas of Ireland. So overall, I thought the tour was very informative, and I thought it was a really great way to kick off the holiday season. And I'd highly encourage you, if you're in the area, to stop by and see them, because you don't necessarily need a tour guide. You can just pop in whenever.
In addition to the Irish room, we also toured the early American room. And Mary mentioned before that there are only two rooms in the entire cathedral that are not used regularly as classrooms, and this is one of those rooms. So, to set the scene, picture this. It's a dark room. It's made almost entirely of dark wood, a low-hanging ceiling, and a long central table sits in the middle of the room, with benches on either side of it. Along the right-hand wall is a large fireplace, and on the other sides of the other walls are high-backed benches. Christmas decorations, because it's the Christmas season, are made entirely of holly and ivy. Along one wall, if you can tell, there's a secret room, and a ghost story that goes along with that. The fireplace on the right-hand wall is very large. It's the only heat source in the home, and people in the early American times huddled around it for warmth. They would sleep by the fireplace, which is how the story of Cinderella came about, because she would lay next to the fireplace and sleep, and so the cinders would get in her hair, so she became Cinderella. So they slept there, and one of the big things was a mini ice age. We learned in our AP US history class, actually, that the long winter the pilgrims suffered through, that was a cause of this mini ice age and climate change. One of the other things in the room are lanterns with candles in them. They're decorated tin with holes poked in them with beautiful patterns, And they made these candles and these lanterns because the wind would go through, so they needed a way to protect the candles to keep them from going out, so they used these. And they could use these lanterns to guide them through the secret passageways.
Which I will talk about. Now guys, this is very mysterious. Our tour guide opened a small door after telling us stuff we already knew about the Fugitive Slave Act, which he said that the secret passageway, the room upstairs above the early American room, had furnishings that would have been more typical in like the early 1800s than in the 1600s when the original room would have been used, because people added these secret passageways on as additions to their houses. So we went up a winding staircase and then into a small bedroom where the bed was not made, making it look lived in. So our tour guide hastily made the bed and we surveyed the room. There was a chamber pot, which our tour guide mentioned.
And a little cradle that there's a very interesting story our tour guide told us about.
Yes. Our tour guide actually told us two stories, one about a University of Pittsburgh student who lived in the dorm room for a time. I don't know how they got away with this, but they were eventually caught. But somehow they were living there for quite some time, and they were eventually caught. But he also told us about this time when he had a tour come in from, I don't really know where, but there were people both in the bottom of the room and in the secret passage. So the people standing up in the secret passage, as he was talking, they saw the cradle behind him begin to rock. Well, it turns out, because there are cracks in the floorboards, if the cradle is in the right position, you can stick a pen up into the air if you're on the bottom floor and make the cradle rock. I'm doing this with my hand right now. Caroline.
So, in contrast with the frigid early American winters, in Latin America, South America, it's usually very hot for Christmas, sometimes even uncomfortably so. It's not unusual for it to go up to the 90s, or even higher in some parts. Because of this, a lot of their traditions are very different from ours. Some of us here do have fake trees, but in South America, it's virtually impossible to have an actual live pine tree. So if you have a tree, it's going to be fake. They have Santa Claus like us, called Papá Noel, and some other Christmas traditions, including one very important one, which is the Midnight Mass on Christmas Eve. Pretty much every South American will be attending Midnight Mass, even though South America is not actually very Catholic. It is Catholic in the sense that a lot of the population of South America affiliates themselves as Catholic, but they're not practicing Catholic. A side note is that the Nationality Rooms of Pittsburgh doesn't include a Latin American room, but the Latin American Committee is trying to raise money to create a Latin American room. This would be interesting to see, particularly because the Latin American style of teaching is very different from ours. We change classrooms every 39 minutes to go to our next class, while they remain in one classroom and will have 15-minute breaks in which the teacher is the one to switch classes. So that's very interesting. Going off of the Catholic majority in South America, because South America was mostly populated by Spanish people, the religion comes from Spain. Spain, however, is very touchy about their religion because of the Inquisition in the 1400s. I visited Spain over the summer and took a tour of some of the cities in southern Spain, including Seville and Granada, and I learned that a lot of the people do not like to discuss their religion. In the early 1000s, up until the 1400s in Spain, most of the country was populated by Arabs, called Moors. They brought with them a very distinct style of architecture called the Mudéjar style. Most of the cities in southern Spain have remnants of that style of architecture, especially Seville, where you can see in El Alcázar Real, and in Granada, where you can see La Alhambra. They're both Moorish castles in the different cities, and the Mudéjar style is very distinct. It has very bright tiling with lots of repeated patterns and lots of Arab scripts. It's very bright, and there are small alcoves and niches in the wall with detailed windows. And speaking of the Mudéjar style of architecture, while we were in the nationality rooms at Pitt, we saw the Syria-Lebanon room. And in that room, which is another of the classrooms that is not used regularly for classes, you could see the same distinct Mudéjar style, which makes sense because it came from the Arabs. We could also see a Christian nativity scene on the table because most or parts of Syria are Christian, which may be surprising to some people and not so surprising to others.
Caroline, I was personally reminded of the Christian population in Syria when touring that room. During the holiday season, we are reminded to be thankful for our blessings and the freedoms we exercise daily. Today, there are tens of thousands of Christian families with children that have escaped the attacks of radical Islamic groups in Iraq and Syria and are now in Jordan and Lebanon. Mostly well-educated and middle class, they now live in tents supplied by the United Nations and face the possibility of being underserved by the Islamic-run charities in Jordan. There are so many Christian children that cannot all be helped, but Christmas for Refugees, founded in Jordan, works to make one special day brighter for just some by arranging a traditional Christmas meal for them. In 2013 and 2014, Christmas events that included hot meals were served to Christian refugee children in Jordan and Lebanon. In 2015, the program is expanding to Christian internally displaced persons who fled the Islamic State as it captured Mosul and Christian villages near that city. In all, they hope to serve nearly 5,000 children this year. As this is a meal program that is a Christian celebration, many Muslim children who are refugees would be afraid to attend. However, outreach is also supplied for them. I would like to open the discussion to the group and just ask, what does it mean to you to have the opportunity to practice your human right, to practice your faith? What does that mean to you?
I definitely feel very blessed to be able to freely practice my religion. I definitely think this is a very good cause because we're helping these people celebrate the holidays that they feel are sacred to themselves. And many people don't have that freedom that we do have in America. And I think that we as Americans and having such a very, we're definitely lucky to have what we have. And I think that we should help these people in as many ways as we possibly can, especially around a season such as the Christmas season. The reason for the holiday season, it's about branching out and helping each other and just giving and giving yourself to other people who can't, who are not as fortunate as us. And I think as Americans, we're very fortunate and we should help these people.
Yes, I totally agree, Mary. Like, I couldn't think of myself in a setting that would repress my religion because I've grown up in America my whole life. But, I mean, for these people, it's like a daily reality, and I just can't picture that.
Mara said you can't imagine what it's like for them. When I went to Spain over the summer, I got to see how much of an impact the Inquisition had on the people still to this day. Despite it having happened over 600 years ago, it's had such a big impact. People are still would prefer to not discuss their religion, not discuss what faith they practice. It's a huge tragedy.
And also, to play off of what Caroline said, there are also countries such as France where you are free to practice your religion, but concepts in France such as laïcité, is that right, Mary?
Yes.
Who speaks French? The concept that you can't outwardly display your religion. And I think that that's another factor that, you know, do we ever feel pressured to act in that way or conceal our faith? It's something to consider. And also, Mary mentioned, you know, we should feel responsible for helping them if we are able. And something I realized was the organization states that generally the value of a good package in this area of food is, for one family, is only $50 to $60. So when we put that in perspective, I mean, that's not a lot to, that's not a large portion of most Americans' budgets around the holidays.
On a lighter note, we are excited to showcase one of Oakland Catholic's most talented performers. Coming up, we will meet junior Isabella Vary.
Mara Ward here for Radio OC
and I will be interviewing Isabella Berry about her life in the Pittsburgh School for the Choral Arts Choir. Hi, Isabella.
Hi, Mara.
How are you today?
I'm very good. How are you?
I'm pretty good. So, let's get down to business. When did you begin singing?
I started singing in first grade with my children's choir at my church.
So, did your parents, both being opera singers, influence you to want to begin singing?
A little bit, but mostly it was that a lot of my friends joined the choir at the same time, so I kind of got pulled along with it.
That's great. Well, you are a part of the Consentio Choir of the Pittsburgh School for the Choral Arts. How long have you been doing that?
Well, I've been part of the organization, the Pittsburgh School for the Choral Arts, since third grade, so this is my ninth year. I was one of the founding members of what is now called Harmonia, which is the third through sixth grade training choir. And then when I was in sixth grade, I moved up to what is now called Consentio. It was then just called the Tor Choir. And I have since been involved in the Tor Choir and the Chamber Choir, which is an invitation-only select group.
Oh, invitation-only. Well, then you must be pretty good.
Well, that, and I've been there for so long, they're not quite sure what else to do with me.
So, just a little thing about the name change. What is the meaning behind the name change from just the Tor Choir to Consentio?
Well, Consentio means singing together in harmony, which is obviously what we do. We're a choir. Mm-hmm. But we underwent a huge name change about 4 years ago, I want to say. And we had been originally called the Oakland Girls Choir, and then there was the Tor Choir, the Chamber Choir, and the two training choirs. But all of the names changed to the Pittsburgh School for the Choral Arts, which is now the overarching program. Mm-hmm. There are four training choirs. There's the Boys Choir Vivo, which is why it wasn't the Oakland Girls Choir anymore, because we wanted to open up more doors for little boys. They're very cute. Then the youngest girls choir is Melodia. The next one up, which I started, was Harmonia, or is Harmony. And then it started this year, it's 7th and 8th grade girls, is Via, which leads up directly into the Tor Choir, which is now called Consentio, and then the Chamber Choir, which just has kept its name.
Okay, so you can only be in the Tor Choir if you're in high school?
Well, it depends. Once you're in Via, you're there until our choir director, Kathy, kind of sees that you are musically mature enough to move up. So we have the first batch of Via girls in the choir now, and most of them are in 7th grade because they were a little bit older of a group than is in Via now. But I moved up when I was in 6th grade. A couple of my other friends did, but most people move up 7th or 8th grade.
So just to tell the listeners a little bit about your voice, what part do you sing in the choir?
I am a soprano 1B. So I sing in a 3-part. I'm a soprano 1, so that's the highest part. In 4-part, I'm also a soprano 1. But then when we split into 6-part, which we do a fair amount of, I am the second top from the highest. So okay. I'm right kind of there in the middle.
Can you explain a typical rehearsal or practice? Or how often do you even practice?
Well, we have, because I'm in the chamber choir, we have a 2-hour rehearsal on Monday nights. And then we have a 2.5-hour rehearsal for the Tor Choir on Fridays, and then once a month a 4 or 5-hour rehearsal on Saturdays. When we get closer to concerts, we have extended rehearsals. For example, this week we have a 3-hour rehearsal for Chamber Choir and then a 4 or 5-hour rehearsal for Tor Choir in preparation for our concert.
So when's the concert?
The big holiday concert is this Saturday, December 12th at 4 o'clock at Shadyside Presbyterian. Little advertising pitch for you there.
Thank you. So when did you begin touring with the choir? Because that's an interesting aspect that I want to talk about.
Well, I started when I was in sixth grade and I moved up. And it happened that year we had one of our international tours, which we have every 3 years. So I got to go to England for 2 weeks. And we toured around there. And then the other tours that come in between the international tours are week-long to a region of the country. So we've done the Midwest this past year. We did not New England, but like upstate New York area. And there, the year before I joined, they did the South. So we've done a lot of different areas. It happened that 2 years ago we were supposed to go on an international tour, but actually went to the West Coast and did a choral festival there. And then next year will be my last international tour.
Aww. Are you sad?
I am. I love going on tour. That's the best part.
That's great. I mean, I've heard from you in confidence, I guess. You eat a lot of lasagna on the road, but that's pretty much all I know.
Lasagna is the best part of tour. We get a lot of it.
Is there a theme for the tours, or do you do a wide range of songs, like in terms of material?
Each concert is based around a theme that our choral director comes up with. So the theme for this concert, our Christmas concert, or holiday concert, is peace on earth. So most of our songs focus around that. So we have Christmas Tide, which is our kind of anthem for the holiday concerts, that talks about truth and love and peace. And then we have another song, Al Shlosha, which says that it's in Hebrew, it's the world is sustained by three things: truth, justice, and peace. So everything kind of comes back to that peace theme, and obviously that inspires the name for the concert.
Yeah. I know this is kind of on the spot, but you mentioned the song Christmas Tide, and you said it was the anthem that your choir sings. I think you told me before that your choir sings this every year,
mm-hmm.
and that alumni can come back and sing this song too. So could you sing a little bit of it?
I can. Trumpets on and voices rise in an endless stream of praise. Truth and love and hope abide this Christmas tide.
My goodness, you have such a beautiful voice.
Thank you.
It's I've said it's so clear. I've said this before.
Well, that's one of the things our choir director makes sure that we all have, that is a really forward pitch, so that we're all not kind of just going for volume, but also for that really kind of crystal sound.
Yes, it's very good technique.
Thank you.
Now, did you have a concert? We both took the SATs on Saturday, and you said that you and your friend were taking the SATs and that you had to go like straight to a concert, or was it a rehearsal?
It was a concert. We actually, every year we do this thing called the Sing-a-thon, which is our annual fundraiser, and we raise money for our tour. It pretty much single-handedly pays for the tour. And every girl has to raise a certain amount of money, and then we sing usually 4 concerts in one day. And usually we go to Canterbury Place, which is a nursing home in Oakland, and also the Shadyside Nursing Home, I believe it's called, where we have a few connections, and we do concerts there. We do a big concert, one at each place, and then when we're at Canterbury Place, we also do smaller concerts in the skilled nursing and dementia units. Unfortunately, I was only able to be there for the 2 larger concerts because of the SAT. But it's a really kind of fun fundraiser, and it's just a great thing to do because we have a week till the concert, and it's great practice for all of our music. But it's also, we get to perform for all of these people who probably usually wouldn't be able to get out and see our concerts. So,
yeah, that's great that this happens in the setting that it happens, where they can have a little bit of joy
mm-hmm.
in this December month. Okay, you've already said that the concert is on December 12th, but where is that and what time is it?
It's at Shadyside Presbyterian Church, right at the corner of Amberson and 5th. It's right off of there. And it's at 4 p.m. Everybody should come. It should be really fun.
I should come.
You should come.
I'm going to come.
Yay!
All right. Well, thank you so much for talking to me today, Isabella.
Absolutely. It was great.
Welcome back to Radio C. That was a great interview, Mara, with Isabella Vary, and who is one of our star performers at Oakland Catholic. Can you tell us more about it, or are you still planning on going to the show?
Well, I have a confession to make. I'm not going to be able to make it.
Oh, how come?
Because Oakland Catholic's own semi-formal dance is happening on Saturday.
Oh, how unfortunate. Well, I'm sure we'll have other opportunities throughout the holiday season to see Isabella and her choir perform. That concludes this episode of Radio C on Youth Express, recorded live from Oakland Catholic High School. Special thanks to Mrs. Rinkus, our moderator, and the Youth Express team. We welcome your feedback and input. Please address comments to info@youthexpress.org. You're listening to Youth Express, all youth, all the time. For more of this podcast or others like it on demand, find us on SoundCloud or stay tuned to youthexpress.org. Youth Express, catch the future.